You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
I'm Caroline Hyde at Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology.
And it was a tough first day of trading for the year, especially for Tesla shareholders. The stock falling by the most since 2020 after deliveries they miss.
And Sam Bankman-Fried pleads not guilty as the FTX founder faces trial in October, the same day the top US banking watchdogs send a warning about crypto activity.
And the slowdown in ad spending will continue to shake up Silicon Valley giants like Google and Meta. That's as Netflix and TikTok come into play. We bring you expert analysis. But first, on this first day of 2023 trading, Ed, it is good to be back with you. And we talk about it all with Dana Hull. We're pleased to say she joins us to kick off this New Year's show, these new glasses as well with Ed. We love them. But Dana, people don't love the numbers that came out of Tesla. What is it, 405,278 vehicles in the last 3 months. Why was that such a shock to the 420 that they promised?
Well, you know, it's always about expectations. A beat is a beat and a miss and a miss is a miss. And this is a clear miss. I mean, Elon Musk spent the last earnings call talking about Tesla was going to have this epic year end. And we saw on social media that Franz, the chief designer, was at the delivery center helping to hand over the car. So everyone was kind of expecting that the numbers would be pretty close to consensus, but they missed consensus by a mile, even the company's own consensus. And you can't, you know, you just can't be that way when you're this kind of a company in the S&P 500. I mean, people are expecting things to be better. The other thing is that over 34,000 cars were quote unquote in transit. And so it's like Tesla is this big company now, and yet they still have this logistical problem in terms of getting cars into the hands of customers at the end of every quarter.
Third consecutive quarter of missing delivery estimates, I think I'm right in saying. Yep. And then the other kind of thing that jumped out for me in your story is that they didn't quite make that 50% average annual growth rate. A lot of analysts have cut price targets. I mean, what is the picture now for Tesla going forward in 2023?
Well, they report earnings later this month, and the big question is the hit to margins. So, you know, they cut all these prices to try to make the delivery target. That didn't work. So now there's going to be a great hit to gross margins. And I think the big thing, too, is guidance. Like, why didn't Tesla lower their guidance? You had Elon Musk selling shares of his stock in the company mid-December when he clearly had a clear look at what demand was like for the quarter. So he unloads his stock, everyone else is holding the bag, and then they miss by several units. And so going into earnings, everyone's cutting their targets, and everyone wants more conservative guidance for the year going forward.
All right, Bloomberg's Dana Hull, thank you very much. I want to continue the conversation and stick with Tesla with ARK Invest's chief futurist, Brett Winton. Brett, we'll get into ARK's long-term call around Tesla shortly, but just first, your reaction to the fourth quarter deliveries miss, and as we were discussing with Dana, the third consecutive miss for deliveries for Tesla.
I think it's ironic that you qualify it as a miss when a company delivers 40% year-on-year growth against an auto market that's declining 8%. I think it's very clear from our perspective that electric vehicles are going to become the dominant drivetrain for automotive over the next 5 years. And we think there'll be 60 million EVs sold in 2027, and Tesla will take a plurality of that. And so they have a huge tailwind behind them. You know, equities are priced on the basis of future expectations of cash flow, not the quarterly delivery quarterly results. And so I expect that over the, you know, long term, this will resolve and will be seen as just a blip in the company's trajectory.
Brett, you called it ironic. What I'm saying is that, you know, we need a yardstick, a benchmark on which to go by, right? It's three consecutive quarters of miss against consensus. But you also mentioned that 40% annual growth. Tesla set out once again in 2022 hopes of reaching a 50% annual average growth target. They didn't hit that either. Do you expect them to hit it going forward?
Yeah, whether or not they hit their growth target is a function of production, not demand. And so right now the market is talking a lot about demand. I think it's probably true that consumers are confused by the U.S. regulation and which EVs will qualify and what makes and models will. And so there is probably a demand kind of hiccup as people tried to assess and wait out kind of tax guidance for getting money off the vehicle starting in the new year. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's a question of whether or not Tesla can scale production. And they've demonstrated over time that they can. And I think that's the, you know, we're making a huge transition from one drivetrain to another. Tesla is at least 3 or 4 years ahead of the industry in driving that transition. And we believe they're going to continue to scale, drive down cost of manufacture. Yeah. And that's not a scenario where you end up with a problem on even margins. As Dana mentioned, who knows what the margins will look like this quarter? I think over time, the company's delivered an ability to expand gross margins and operating margins as they have this incredible tailwind of demand for electric vehicles, which is the way in which we're going to ride around.
Talk to us, though, about the competition, of course. You say they're well ahead of it, but competition is coming, and it's coming fiercely, Brett.
Sure. So Tesla released the Model 3 in 2017, and it basically took the industry 4 years before there was a range and cost competitive vehicle with the Model 3. With that 2017 Model 3, and their cars haven't stayed the same. In March, we think that Tesla is going to announce a new vehicle platform and that the cost of manufacture for that vehicle platform will be roughly half the cost of the Model 3. If you look at what happened when they released the Model 3, they had a massive gross margin expansion and massive unit volume expansion over multiple years. I think the same thing is going to happen with the new vehicle platform they announced in March. And so they're going to set the standard for the industry again. The industry will again be 4 or 5 years behind. And for shareholders, it's a great outcome. You end up with a company establishing a strategic footprint in a massive, literally trillion-dollar plus market and likely to dominate and soak up all of the profits out of that industry as the rest of the competitors
even in
struggle
China.
To catch up. Well, I mean, China's a slightly different market than the U.S. and Western markets. I think that Tesla will remain at the higher end of the Chinese market, and clearly they have a beneficial and synergistic relationship with the government in China, and that they're providing demand for the Chinese battery ecosystem and releasing a product into the market that the Chinese domestics really enjoy and love. And that market's likely to be more competitive just because cost of manufacture is so much lower there.
Right. Brett, ARK has a sort of long-term call on the stock, $4,600 per share, which you expect to materialize in 2026. I asked Twitter users and our followers, our audience on the show, kind of what they wanted to ask you. Many wanted to ask about that call, if it still is intact, but they also wanted to ask how much of it is reflective of the promise of full self-driving away from just the simple business of selling vehicles.
Sure. So just a note, that $4,600 a share, that was pre-stock split. So you have to make an adjustment for the stock split for the current adjusted share price expectation. Though our expectation hasn't changed. And in fact, we're going through the process of updating our 2027 numbers right now. So keep an eye out for that, as well as our overall EV forecast and in our big ideas report that we'll release later this month. The roughly a third of the value of the business is the EV manufacturing business, in our view, and two-thirds of the value of the business is expectations for robotaxi. And that's a really important consideration here. People act like, oh, this unit number in 2022 matters tremendously in the scheme and scope of the business model. If they can deliver full self-driving, that will transform the company. You go from getting one-time profitability from each asset sold to ongoing cash flow generation from every asset in field per annum on a go-forward basis, as these individually owned vehicles that are used, you know, 5% of the time and spend 95% of their time parked turn into robo-taxis that can take, you know, 5 or 10 people around in a day and deliver ongoing returns to shareholders. So it will be a business value transformation if and as they deliver it. And the evidence on the ground is they'll be able to. I mean, I use it every day. It makes driving safer, less stressful, and I'm less tired after driving. It's a great product. And by the way, it improved yesterday while it was sitting in my driveway. The car I own today is better than the car I owned yesterday. There's almost no other vehicle in the world you can say that about. And so I think that the promise of that transformation to the business model is really extreme. And you don't need to assume it's going to happen in order to underwrite a really material return for the company.
Brett? Well, certainly the bull case. We thank you for having you on. And do come back with the 2027 updated numbers.
It's the pragmatic case. I mean, like, let's be honest. This is a world-class product that people love and that makes them safer and gets them to and from places faster and easier. And
Brett,
I don't expect that hasn't changed.
Brett Winton,
so we expect it to continue.
Of ARC. We thank you. Hands up. Have a great start to 2023. Thanks for coming on. All things Tesla, all things pragmatic, or some would say bull case. What to expect from tech stocks, of course, more broadly next. Are you bull more generally? We're going to be asking Evercore ISI Senior Managing Director and Head of Internet Research, Mark Mahaney. That's next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop. Customer satisfaction scores would rise and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done. The Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit returns to London on April 25th for a solutions-driven look at the sustainable business and finance landscape, looking at the latest trends in ESG regulations, supply chain innovation and transition finance. Speakers include leaders from CDP, Emirates Environment Group, Seedtrace, COA and more. Summit advisors include City Commercial Bank, Red Sea Global and Schneider Electric. Visit bloomberglive.com/SBS2024 to learn more.
These tech investors really haven't had to focus on business fundamentals for a long period of time. They've been riding this lower inflation rate cycle and riding the the rise in stock prices have come as a result of that. So tech investors are now actually having to do the work that we have been doing, you know, as active stock pickers our entire career. So that's why we think there's a lot of opportunity there, but you really need to be stock pickers.
Franklin Mutual Advisors portfolio manager Katrina Dudley there with some tough love for you tech investors as we enter this new year. Let's continue the conversation with a man who does a lot of fundamental analysis, Mark Mahaney of Evercore. It is great to start the year with you, Mark, and talk to us about what was cautious and muted in 2022 now turns to constructive after a brutal last year, Mark. Some of your best ideas, and one of them is Uber. It's interesting, we just finished a conversation hot on the heels of Tesla, of robo-taxis. What fundamentally looks nice to you with Uber, Mark?
Well, Caroline, thanks and happy new year to you. It's nice to see you again. This last year was a terrible year. It was the worst performing year for stocks, especially for growth equities, since 2008. So, that was very challenging. Going into this year, we try to be tactically constructive, which means we're looking for companies that are somewhat recession resistant, and I don't cover defensive space, so somewhat recession resistant, maybe have new revenue streams, and then have taken cost actions, because you need to do that if demand is going to soften. And that leads us to two stocks in particular. You mentioned one, Uber, the other is Netflix. Uber, I just think that the ride-sharing part of the business is more of a utility than a discretionary spend environment. We still need to commute. We still have our weekend outings, and we still have some airport trips, and leisure demand trends seem to be holding up very well. So I just think that that part of the business holds up well. Company has taken a lot of costs out. It was forced to, and it was probably to its own benefit, and they've now turned a corner on free cash flow, and I think they'll be able to continue to grow free cash flow. So I think as the story changes from a growth at all cost company to a positive free cash flow company, I just think that you're going to find a lot of valuation support for the name, and that's why I think the stock can outperform this year.
It's interesting, just there already you're getting to the nuts and the bolts, the fundamentals, the decisions, why you're picking certain companies to perform over and above others. Do you think it's true that a lot of technology investors out there haven't done their fundamental analysis, or indeed aren't able and set up for an environment that is completely at odds with what they've been used to, which is basically lower rates for longer?
There's no question that easy money time, with practically zero interest rates, allowed multiples, for one, to get in times very aggressive. And fools follow fools. And I was certainly one of those fools from time to time on certain stocks. We all make mistakes. I've made more than my share of them. But in terms of the fundamentals, I still stick with those. And I think a lot of tech investors do. I don't think that it's rising interest rates that has caused names like Amazon or Google or Meta to underperform as stocks. I think there are other issues, including now increasingly cyclical risk. In case of Meta, there are these Apple privacy changes. In the case of Amazon, there's also some mis-execution on airport, and then also just full exposure to inflationary concerns. So there really were a lot of issues besides just rising rates. Rising rates really affected those long-term profitable, near-term profit-less companies, and that would be more names like a Shopify, for example. And that's why you saw names like that with the highest multiples correct the most last year.
Mark, Caroline and I spent a lot of the last few weeks of the year talking about layoffs or hiring freezes, cost cutting. I'm trying to summarize all of your points there, but you seem to be suggesting that all the pain is gone. Like, it's been done. We've gone through it. We've de-risked. Is that your conclusion going into this year?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't be that bold. Multiples have been de-risked. Could multiples still fall? Of course they could. But they have fallen pretty dramatically, and you've got a good number of these large cap internet names that I look at that are trading at 5-year trough multiples. Doesn't mean it can't go down further, but a lot of the risk has been taken out. Same thing with estimates. And one of the things that's caused estimates to come down are these companies taking costs out of their business. The 6% RIF reduction in force at DoorDash, the 13% RIF reduction in force at Meta. These companies, and Amazon did this too. There are companies that have yet to do this, though. Google is one where I just think they had 5 quarters in a row of accelerating in record high employee adds up through the September quarter of last year. That's really kind of a little bit shocking in hindsight. I'm surprised that the company didn't start tempering down its number of new employees. I think they're going to have to start, reducing that employee footprint, or else margin's going to be under a lot of pressure.
Mark, we took to Twitter to ask our audience how they see 2023. We asked, are you bullish on tech? Are you bearish on tech? These are the results. We'll bring them up for you. Mostly bullish, 46% of respondents bullish. What would it take to make you bullish on technology broadly going into the rest of the year?
Well, Ed, I'm actually surprised that the survey was that bullish, frankly. I'm surprised by that. So, you know, I want to be tactically constructive. And I'll tell you one thing, I still want to get across the point here. I think demand trends are going to continue to soften. They did in Q3. I think when the Q4 results come out over the next month, we're going to see that revenue trends for online retail, online advertising, cloud computing companies, those are all continue to soften. And I think they will continue to in the middle, the middle of 23. Then I hope, and the market hopes, that fundamental trends stabilize, revenue growth starts to reaccelerate. If that happens, you'll start seeing multiples go up. And especially with cost taken out, you have revenue growth reacceleration on a lower cost base. You get this EPS slingshot opportunity. That's what's going to cause these stocks to work well. So the market's sort of hoping, thinking that that'll happen in the back half of 23. Yes. And the question we all need to ask ourselves is the market going to be too early or too late on that call?
All right, Mark Mahaney of Evercore, day one of 2023 in the bag. Thank you.
It was Sam Bankman-Fried's day in court. The FTX founder appeared before a federal judge in Manhattan and pleaded not guilty to criminal charges. He's now set to face a trial in October. Still outside is the one, the only, Shanali Basak joining us from the courthouse. And, well, where next, Shanali?
What a day it's been, Caroline, because in addition to him pleading not guilty, as we had expected, to eight criminal counts here, there's a lot else that happened. A trial date has been set for October 2nd. Now, if everything goes correctly, and that does indeed happen on October 2nd, this is expected here to take a number of weeks to play out in terms of the trial that we might see later this year. In the coming weeks, we expect the U.S. to start presenting their evidence, to present evidence at greater scale on the charges that they have made. And remember, then there is a process by which Sam Bankman-Fried and his lawyers set forward their motion. So there is a process here, and again, things could change before October, certainly. But we did get a lot of information today about the nature of what will play out ahead and the timelines in which we are preliminarily operating on. Now, I will also say there was contention in the court. Sam Bankman-Fried came in wearing a suit, North Face backpack, sat with his arms crossed as the prosecutors asked to amend the terms of his bail package. Now, this is very interesting because Bloomberg has separately reported, Ava Benny Morrison for us has broken that U.S. prosecutors are separately investigating this idea here of money being transferred out of FTX and Alameda wallets. Remember, the part of the bail amendment now is for them to seek that SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried himself, cannot be taking money, cannot be taking any cryptocurrency assets or any other assets from Alameda and FTX wallets. Now, he himself has tweeted, as we know, that he has not done so. But the prosecutor had said, the assistant attorney had said that this is something that they've seen him lie about before in general. And so, again, a point of contention here, but we will see this play out in real time.
All right. Thanks to Bloomberg, Shanali Basak. October seems a long way away, given that that story has dominated headlines for the last 2 months.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Caroline Hyde in New York alongside Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. And Ed, big tech story out of the world of hedge funds, in fact, today.
Yeah, it was really interesting because throughout the day, this was one of the most read stories on the Bloomberg terminal and online. It's about SurgaCap, okay? Debuted Tuesday. It's the first or biggest launch by a woman-led hedge fund, $1.8 billion in assets under management. And I found this so fascinating because we've been writing a lot of Bloomberg about how hedge funds suffered in 2022. Those that kind of looked more to private markets fared a little bit better. But this is really interesting based on what SurgaCap is going to be focused on. Malaga Ankar is the founder. She's kind of this alumni of Lone Pine Capital. And according to sources, this is interesting, Caroline, she's going to be using data science to invest in themes that look at how technology can improve pretty bog standard areas. So how technology enhances financials, industrials, healthcare, enterprise data. But really the why we care here is that this is the largest debut of a woman-led hedge fund in the industry's history, given all of the volatility literally around this industry and the underperformance of 2022. It was a headline that caught my eye, and certainly this is a name that we want to keep an eye on going forward.
Historic day. It would seem there's some history being made in politics as well. Very briefly, we want to bring you the headline. After McCarthy has suffered a historic rebuff, remember, in a pretty drawn-out speaker vote, they are going to be adjourning now until tomorrow, Wednesday, noon, after failing to elect a speaker of the House. Of course, that's in the United States politics. So for now, we see an adjournment after three rounds of votes to elect a speaker of the House. But let's get back to our bread and butter. Let's get back to technology. Let's get back to, in fact, pre-seed investing as well. And in this environment, many saying that's still the area that's going to be humming along quite nicely. Mayal Gavay is with us, CEO of Techstars. He's invested in, get this, more than 3,300 early-stage startups, making it one of the world's largest pre-seed investors, having written early checks to companies such as Uber and Twilio. Mayal, it is wonderful to have you here in New York. And how are you feeling as we enter 2023? How are the companies which you help fund feeling?
I think 2023 is going to be one of the trickiest year on record since the dot-com bubble for both investors and startups, and mostly because there are so many things happening at the same time. So on one hand, you have valuations going down, fundraising lasting much longer, IPO not happening, and as a result of that, we expect a lot of companies are going to fail. At the same time, we're seeing an influx of early stage ideas and a lot of entrepreneurs on the back of some of the tech layoffs that have made the headlines. And then on top of that, you have the VC industry, which is going through a fundamental restructuring and what looks more and more like a pretty deep consolidation. So trickier for everyone.
Tricky. Many say from the ashes rise the roses, and indeed we saw that perhaps in 2007-8 after the financial crisis. We saw the birth of Uber, we saw the birth of Airbnb and the likes. What do you look for at the moment in the people that you're wanting to be helping, wanting to be mentoring, wanting to be giving money? How are we starting to see a focus on perhaps the profit side of the equation?
So we've been investing early stage for 15 years, and we have continuously looked for the same thing. We want resilient, unstoppable founders who are working on really innovative ideas and big markets. And the reason why 2023 for early stage investors like us is really exciting is because we see a lot, again, talking about the tech layoff, a lot of tech workers coming and being like, I want to be an entrepreneur. And they come with very big ideas, and then when you look, whether it's by geography or by industry, there's like massive pool of innovation happening. And so I don't think there's ever been a better time to be an early stage investor, actually.
Mayal, one of the conversations Caroline and I were having towards the end of 2022 was about the positives that come out of layoffs. So obviously incredibly tough losing your job. But actually, if you look back at prior recessions, the dot-com bubble, 2008, a lot of those layoffs go on to be entrepreneurs in their own right, start their own companies. Do you agree with that school of thought?
Absolutely. And we're seeing it right now. The number of entrepreneurs who are pitching us to become their investors who come from the Meta of this world, the Google of this world, has increased dramatically. And so that's extremely positive. And again, across multiple industries and multiple geographies, we're seeing that. The other positive that is not always talked about is for early stage companies, there was a lot of pressure on compensation to hire tech workers, and with the layoff that have happened in 2022, the pressure on compensation has decreased, and it has been a lot easier for a lot of our portfolio companies to hire the head of product that they had always dreamed about or the CFO that they had always dreamed about.
I find Techstars really interesting. You've got about $1 billion in assets under management, right? But you look at pre-seed. That's very different size and scale to the industry as I understand it. You know, lots of players in the seed stage or pre-seed have tens or maybe $100 million. It makes me think about consolidation and this idea that actually small venture capital firms are all trying to vie for similar promising names. What do you expect the industry to experience this year?
So because we are one of the major deal flow to the venture world, we talk to thousands of investors every year, and we are seeing now something that is not yet reflected in the data. We're seeing an increasing number of emerging managers, managers who have less than $100 million of assets under management, who have raised one, maybe two funds, telling us behind closed door, we're not going to raise our next fund. And so we expect that the number of small venture capital firms is going to decrease dramatically. frankly, potentially up to 50% of the venture capital firm that exists today ceasing practically to function in the next few years.
Maya, your background also really fascinating, and we speak here as a load of Europeans basically around a table talking about US opportunities, but go global for us. You're someone who's led businesses in Russia, in Europe. You're from, of course, France. What are the global opportunities here? Is everything going to revert to the mean, the normal of, oh, we're going to back tech entrepreneurs out of Silicon Valley and they're kind of going to look like us?
I don't think so. I think what's happening right now is a lot of other places creating very vibrant ecosystem. Look at the Middle East and Africa. Right now, it is booming. A lot of entrepreneurs, lots of capital flowing there, big market that are completely untapped. Even Europe, where we're both from, like Paris has done a phenomenal job at creating an extraordinary ecosystem. And so we at Techstars are very bullish on opportunities, not just in the US. Obviously, the US remain the leading market for tech entrepreneurs, but also Middle East, Africa, and Europe, for sure.
Mayo, the IPO market ground to a halt last year. Will it revive this year?
I don't think so. It looks like it's going to continue to flatline. The unknown, obviously, is around a few of the big IPO which are supposed to be in the pipe. Things like Instacart or Stripe. And that may change the sentiment on the market. But as of today, we advise our portfolio companies to look at alternative. We tell them that if they're desperate for an exit, they probably already lost the battle, and that they should be focusing on alternative option, round of venture debt or M&A as an alternative to IPO.
We do get a little bit hung up on IPOs, right? This kind of North Star that you look to go public, but actually it precedes seed stage. You have options, right? Strategics can acquire you. You can, you know, basically shop yourself to a bigger party. What are some of those options? I mean, do you see M&A broadly taking place in 2023?
Absolutely. And again, behind closed door, because of our large portfolio, we have a lot of conversations with a lot of people in the market. And what we're seeing is an increasing number of large companies looking at M&A. Because the valuations are going down, it makes it more attractive for them. And because the founders are struggling to fundraise from the VC world, they are more amenable to have this conversation. So I would expect a lot more M&A this year and next year.
Let's talk industries or problems looking to be fixed right now, because you talk about M&A, and a lot of the issues about M&A are sometimes regulatory in their mind, and people can't make the acquisitions they perhaps would like to. What are the problems that people want to fix, that they would like to fix right now? What are you seeing from these entrepreneurs who are perhaps getting laid off at some of the big companies that can't do the purchasing right now?
So number one, climate tech. And it's at a point right now where I'm starting to wonder whether there's not going to be a big bubble specifically in climate tech, but the market is hot, lots of innovation, lots of capital, and look, objectively big problems to solve, so that's an interesting market. We're also seeing a lot of things happening in food tech and ag tech, in particular following the war in Ukraine and the problem with supply chain, so I think a lot of people have started realizing that actually we needed to be more focused on creating food for the world. And then health tech is also booming. Lots of things happening in that environment, especially in developing countries where people are starting to get access to better health care.
Really good to have some time with the head.
Yeah, well, you know, we're very focused on that, you know, that what I would call the sexy end of the startup curve, right? We talked all about these growth stage companies. Actually, everything you and I have heard in recent weeks says, look at seed and pre-seed stage, because that's where we'll see some activity in 2023. Mayal Garvey, CEO of Techstars, will find out over the course of the next 12 months if you're right. Thank you. Now, coming up, from the IPO drought to the ads drought, how will Meta and Google fare as the advertising market moves out of their favor? What does that mean for media? This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done. The Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit returns to London on April 25th for a solutions-driven look at the sustainable business and finance landscape, looking at the latest trends in ESG regulations, supply chain innovation and transition finance. Speakers include leaders from CDP, Emirates Environment Group, Seedtrace, COA and more. Summit advisors include City Commercial Bank, Red Sea Global and Schneider Electric. Visit BloombergLive.com/SBS2024 to learn more.
I want to bring you some headlines that cross the terminal this hour. Twitter is easing its political ad policies in an effort to boost revenue. We'll dig into that as we get more information. But a slowdown in advertising markets could present a big problem for tech this year. US advertising growth is expected to halve from 10% to 5% in 2023, according to an analysis published Tuesday by Bloomberg Intelligence. Here to discuss is Mark Douglas, CEO of Mountain, a software to help companies launch direct response campaigns on television in particular. Mark, let's start with that forecast, the idea that broadly the ad market's growth will slow from 10% to 5% in 2023. Does that reflect what you're seeing?
Yeah, and it's occurring for a couple of reasons. I think in when you look at like paid search and paid social, especially paid social, like we're talking Instagram, yeah, TikTok, those kind of platforms. What you're seeing there, I think, is a lot of concerns about brand safety, around the political discourse on these platforms, and also just the sheer performance. Apple's changes did wind up having an impact. Their changes in terms of identification of devices did wind up having an impact, in particular on Meta and Snap and others. The other thing that's affecting it, when you look at the television market, there's just a supply-demand imbalance. You have a lot of inventory coming online from Netflix, Disney Plus, and other suppliers. And while brand advertisers are literally not spending more, they're spending less. So that's going to create a price war, and you're going to see declining prices. The two of those combined are having a pretty negative impact in the near term on these markets. But I think you'll see more growth in the second half.
2022 was just packed with news and significant events. So you think back to February and the start of the war in Ukraine, the impact that had on advertising and the shock that Meta gave us in February. And then by the end of the year, we're talking about ad-supported tiers for Disney, for Netflix, and the market's changed its conversation. How important were those sort of big ticket items in 2022 in shaking up the landscape in advertising?
Yeah, I don't think that kind of news. I mean, obviously, the war in Ukraine then affected the stock market. So I think what we saw is over the summer, advertisers just somewhat panicked and didn't know what to do. Yeah. So, but that started to recover in the second half of the year. At least in our business, we ended the year with record-breaking months. So, you know, if that's any indication of a larger market, advertisers, like I said, panicked over the summer. And I think once they got in the holiday season, they realized, look, if we're going to grow our business, we're going to have to spend money to reach consumers. So I think ultimately the market in the second half kind of stabilized. But again, these macro forces, you know, especially like price wars coming from so much supply, Those kind of things are just having a big overall effect. I think it will create a better future, though, meaning that there's no longer this duopoly of just Google and Meta, you know, dominating advertising. Yeah. I think television is now digital. It's going to really have a big impact on the overall market.
Okay, so who wins there, Mark, from your perspective?
In terms of TV, it's the big players. I think you're likely to see a lot of M&A. So what's going to happen is there are new advertisers coming in the market. I mean, TV is now, the way to think of this is there was this duopoly between Google and Meta. They now control less than half of the advertising market. So their overall control has declined as other areas have grown. And so what has happened is television with connected TV streaming is digital also, and is now benefiting in the same way that digital advertising benefited Google and Meta. And so you see this growth occurring there, more customers coming into the market, they're spending more, it's diversifying the customer base away from just 1,000 or 2,000 advertisers to many more. And so television is coming on strong as this third big scale channel that's now a true digital channel. And I don't think that means Meta and Google lose, but it just kind of means that they no longer dominate in the way they have in the past. And that's really good overall for the advertising industry.
And there's new sort of rules of the game that a load of the companies that you speak to have to learn, particularly when it comes to maybe Disney Plus not wanting to advertise. If you're thinking of alcohol, if you're thinking of politics, we've just had the headline about Twitter perhaps going a little bit more into political advertising. But how are some of the clients that you speak to, how are companies and advertisers, marketers thinking about where they place their ads, how they place their ads?
Yeah, I mean, so the advertising market is split into brand advertisers, and that you don't sell alcohol like over the internet, right? you shouldn't be. And so, you know, the brand advertisers that everyone thinks of when they watch sports and watch other TV, there's not actually that many of them. It's about, you know, 1,000 to 2,000, but it's what everyone thinks of. It's the direct response advertisers. I mean, Meta has 10 million customers advertising on their platform. Those are the numbers they announced. Google has an equal or higher number. And now you're seeing a lot of those advertisers come to television. And so those advertisers really don't care about those rules. It's the brand advertisers that worry about how their brand is being perceived. The direct response advertisers that really truly dominate advertising. They're like, if you think of the direct response market in the U.S. is three times the size of the brand advertising market on television. Those direct response advertisers, they just want to reach consumers wherever they are. They're not worried about rule. You know, they're not thinking of those rules. So you know, all of these things you're seeing in terms of, you know, rules like that, that really just pertains to the advertisers that are not directly measuring the response to their ads, which is what we mean when we say direct response advertising.
Mark, great to get your direct analysis with us on direct response advertising and all of the gamut. 2023, maybe some stability there. Mark Douglas, we thank you so much, CEO of Mountain. Meanwhile, well, from advertising year ahead to perhaps your own resolutions around work, what about perhaps we have fewer meetings, hey Ed? E-commerce giant Shopify, did you hear its plea today, putting an end to unproductive meetings, saying, look, employees, just say no. They're currently saying, look, we are calendar purging right now. We're removing all recurring meetings, if we can't remember why or if they started. And also, they're re-upping the rule, Ed, that on a Wednesday, tomorrow, not a single meeting to be had.
That's quite a commonplace thing here on the West Coast. You know, mm-hmm. Twilio, Meta have no meeting Wednesdays. When I read this story, I thought, how are they going to make this happen? You and I, our calendars are full of meetings, right? And in the story, they say that there will be a bot to enforce this. So every time somebody organizes a meeting, you get this bot pop up and say, a reminder, you know, you don't need to have this meeting. Right, it's bizarre. It's completely bizarre. But it's also like the opposite effect of the pandemic, right? We all worked at home, but then became so accustomed to doing constant Zooms or meets or whatever it is.
And it's a money suck. Basically, the University of North Carolina is saying $100 million on average is lost by a big company because everyone's spending their time in meetings, and it's the opportunity cost. It's what you're not doing when you're in that meeting that perhaps didn't need to be arranged. You're not being productive, and perhaps you're being a bit more stressed.
I can hear the producers in my ear saying, don't think about it. You're already late enough as it is to our meetings. Yeah. All the meetings all the time.
Going viral.
an outpouring of support for Damar Hamlin, the 24-year-old Buffalo Bills safety who suffered from cardiac arrest on Monday Night Football. Hamlin is unsurprisingly gaining support with well-wishers, but he's also gaining support in fundraising. His GoFundMe page, astonishing. It was from 2020 to purchase toys for underprivileged children, barely at that point crossed $2,500. The goal was for that of 2022. Now, the fund has more than $4.5 million, more than $3 million donated to the fund in a seven-hour period from more than 75,000 donors. Really, Ed, the outpouring here is substantial, and indeed from some key executives I know you've kept an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, this is our going viral segment, right? And it's fair to say that in those moments after it happened on the field, it did go viral, particularly on Twitter. An example, Bob Iger, the returned CEO of Disney, took to Twitter and said, you know, tonight we should all be praying for Damar Hamlin. But for me, you and I have been covering Twitter in particular, but social media broadly for weeks, months. And this is the first moment where I saw a very widespread support, sympathy, empathy, which has been missing from that platform for some time. And what was so fascinating to me, Caro, is how many people tweeted, please do not share the footage of the incident itself, which was very interesting.
Yeah, there are times where humanity comes together. And in many ways, social media can be a divisive, sometimes sport-like environment where people have their teams and they go against one another. In this moment, there were no teams. There was no division. It is just everyone coming together to try and support one individual.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, that does it from this edition of Bloomberg Technology. Tomorrow, we have the SoFi Head of Investment Strategy, Liz Young.
Yep. And don't forget, of course, to check out our podcast. You can find it on The Terminal, on Apple, Spotify, and on iHeart. This is Bloomberg.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.